Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network.
No. This is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Creepy presents The 31 Days of Horror, Day 20. Dispossessed, written by Paul Casely and narrated by Danielle Hewitt.
It was a Thursday night, and I was enjoying a quiet evening at home when I got a phone call that would change everything for me. Sorry. I guess I should start at the beginning. My name is Rachel Harlow, and I'm an exorcist. Now, I know exactly what you're thinking. I can't be an exorcist, because I'm a woman, and probably not Catholic. Well, you got 2 out of 3 right. I am a woman, and I'm not Catholic. But pretty well every major religion in the world has some form of exorcism, right? As the very Reverend Rachel Harlow, I am the dean of an Anglican cathedral, and also a practicing and well-practiced exorcist. In the 70s, the Church of England set up the Deliverance Ministry that trained select priests in both exorcism and psychiatry. I was one of the worldwide team that was fully trained, and it has become a part of my duties in Ontario, Canada, since that time. There aren't a lot of us, but we are everywhere the Church of England is, and the Anglican Diocese does allow women in the clergy. So, here I am. An exorcist, and I get a call from the diocesan bishop asking me to investigate and perform an exorcism if I deem necessary. It wasn't very often that I'm given full judgment over a case, so I have to admit, I was pretty excited. It turns out the victim was a young woman. I'll call her Grace. I'm sure you understand that I will be making up names for the family, the victim, and pretty much anyone else I come across. These people went through a lot and deserve some kind of anonymity. Anyway, Grace was 23 years old, and according to her parents, her personality had changed so completely that they had difficulty believing it was even their daughter anymore. I knew Grace, and I watched her grow up in the church. Probably another reason that the bishop decided to send me. Part of what I do is to make a clinical psychiatric diagnosis before I embark on any type of exorcism. Most of the time, the person I speak to is suffering from some kind of mental illness, and a combination of drugs and therapy is much more useful than any kind of religious rite. We also would have to rule out medical as well. There was one time that a family was certain that their little boy was the spawn of Satan. I'm sure a lot of parents can relate. But it turned out his rapid change to poor behavior was due to a tumor lodged in his frontal lobe. Thank God it was operable. And once it was successfully removed, the young lad went back to his happy and well-behaved ways. Most cases are similar in some way to that. No exorcism necessary. From time to time, despite the fact that it is a clear case of mental illness, I still do an exorcism, because it can have lasting and positive mental benefits. If the afflicted believes they are possessed but is refusing medication and counseling, the use of an exorcism rite can make them feel like their concern has been listened to. As a result, after performing the rite, they are more likely to successfully complete counseling and start taking whatever mood stabilizers or antipsychotics will help them the most. I have done a few of these. They generally are for show and don't use all the rites and objects contained in a full exorcism rite. The rarest thing is me deeming that a full exorcism is necessary and taking on a rite that could last days before finally breaking the evil spirit that has inhabited them. It is exhausting and requires that I have a doctor with me to ensure the health of both the possessed and the exorcist. I have investigated close to 100 cases, and I have performed 4 full exorcisms. I do a lot of house blessings and personal blessings, but exorcisms are the rarest of the rare, and having 4% of my cases be actual exorcisms makes the diocese wonder what's going on in this province, as 4% is unnaturally high compared to the global statistics. So anyway, back to Grace. I ensured that Grace was fully checked by a doctor before I met with her. Grace was an adult, which meant she had to sign a release so I could be given her private medical information. But she did so willingly. I will say that she was very compliant for someone who was possessed. Having said that, though, I knew it could be an act, as most of the time possession is not what you see in the movies. It would be extremely inefficient for the possessed person to wander around with boils and spitting pea soup. First, it would alert everyone to the fact that the evil spirits really are in our midst. Evil thrives on being undetected. As soon as it is discovered, it is possible to do something about it. Secondly, having some possessed kid crab walk down the street is not a great endorsement for Satan. Who wants people to ignore his existence, thereby strengthening their chance for damnation? Finally, the most likely outcome is that someone walking down the street calling people names in a weird, evil-sounding voice and spinning their head around is to be locked up in an institution forever. That does not exactly do much in the grand scheme of war for human souls. As a result, the most important thing to look for were subtle things that would grow in power and scope when the invading entity was confronted. Upon confrontation, the entity would start out trying to continue their ruse, but then eventually buckle and admit what they were. It was pretty regular and pretty classic. As a result, I was very unprepared for what occurred with Grace. As I had already stated, I had known Grace for a decade, perhaps more. She was generally a strong-willed and intelligent young woman, the antithesis of soft-spoken, which meant I liked her from the start. I knew her to be a person who wouldn't go with the crowd for the sake of belonging. There was a fire in her, and from what I'm told, that is something that her peers found attractive. From what I'm told, Grace never had a shortage of dates and was generally busy socially, especially on the weekends. When I sat down with Grace, I met a very different person. The Grace I met now was mostly silent, only speaking when spoken to. In the beginning, I attributed this to her being frightened by what was going on around her. But as time went on, the issue seemed to be much greater. It seemed like something had sucked the life out of this young woman. All the confidence and vibrancy seemed to be gone. I would get monosyllabic answers to most of my questions if I got answers at all. In many ways, she seemed disoriented and lost. I knew from the medical examination that she was in excellent health, besides being a bit dehydrated. So there seemed to be no medical cause. There was the possibility of a psychiatric issue, as what I was seeing looked like a case of trauma. However, in interviewing her, I couldn't seem to get to the root of whatever trauma it could be. There were other, more far-reaching mental illnesses that could cause this as well, although it was still strange not to have some vestige of her old persona to peek out. Finally, I decided to ask her the big question. Who are you? I did this without blessing and prayer. I did this without uttering the right to demand. I wanted to see what she would say to me. And her answer came back that she was Grace, and she gave her proper last name. Her voice was level, and her answer complete. All of this seemed very strange. Either we were dealing with a psychosis so strong that it changed her entire personality, or a demon that actually was mousy and lacked confidence. Both were possibilities, and as a result, I knew I had to proceed carefully. I did wonder, though, what the point of a timorous demon was, and how it would ever get beyond the gates of hell to inhabit someone. It seemed counterintuitive. Still, I hadn't completed my investigation yet, so I did not want to make judgments. During this time, I did also have the physician sent with me by the diocese carefully watching and taking notes about the procedures as well as any insight he could give. The session was also being recorded, and I knew that the bishop would likely review it that evening. When I spoke privately to the doctor, he stated he couldn't detect any evidence of an illness or mental illness that would cause this particular change in behavior. There was no change in blood composition, no evidence or tumors. Nothing that seemed to lead to medical issues, and unless she had undergone some great trauma in the past few days, something that probably would have been major enough to be reported to authorities, he could think of nothing to cause Grace's behavior shift. We were at a loss at how to proceed. The behaviors did not seem to be those of a demon, nor did they seem to be those of Grace. Quite honestly, I didn't know what to do. As a result, I decided to ask Grace what I should do. After all, she was an adult and had to be at least somewhat aware that something was different. As seems to be the constant theme throughout my narrative of events, nothing could have prepared me for what happened next. I have included an excerpt of the conversation.
Hello, Grace. I'm sure you remember me. Reverend Rachel? Yeah, I remember you. Hello. Your parents are quite concerned about you. No, they're not. Pardon me? You're their daughter, Grace. Of course they're concerned about you. You have changed a lot over the last few days. No, I haven't changed at all. I'm still the same. But I agree something has changed. My parents aren't concerned about me. They're concerned about who was here before. I don't really understand. Are you saying that someone was in you before? Someone who isn't Grace?
At this point, her voice raised in anger.
What I'm saying is that I haven't been the one controlling my body since I was 3 years old and no one noticed. What I'm saying is that the Grace you all love was the demon you've now been sent in to exorcise. I'm the person, the human. You liked the demon better than me. You want the demon back and to hell with me.
At this point, she started giggling hysterically, and I could see that this truth she held was causing her more mental issues than anything else could. I wasn't sure if it was true, but the mere idea was more than a little troubling. I'd be lying if I said I knew what to do at this point. If she was right, a grave injustice was done to this girl. Otherwise, the level of dissociative identity disorder she had was near critical and had somehow been missed by both myself and the medical doctor who was attending with me. I hastily apologized to Grace for cutting our session short and assured her I would be back when I had more answers. As the doctor and I ran out of the room, we could hear Grace pleading, "Put it back! Please put it back! It's a better Grace than I am." Over the next few weeks, I did a fair bit of digging to try and figure out exactly what I could be dealing with. I wish I could say I was certain, but it is often difficult to find certainty when dealing with evil spirits. I had Grace's parents bring me every school book, every drawing, every yearbook, and every digital and audio recording they could find from their daughter's last 2 decades. Written in the margins of almost every school book, I found the same strange design. It started out looking similar to a peace sign, but had a loop at the top and a couple extra bars at the bottom. I suspected that it was the sign of a demon, but it would take work to find out which one. Hell is a hierarchy. Some say that our earthly hierarchical systems were started out by hell as a way to screw with us. All the inequities and hatred on our planet was given to us as a gift from hell, and we picked it up willingly to apply it. If that was true, it meant even the church hierarchy that I labored under was similarly tainted. At any rate, the hierarchy of hell has Satan at its head, with 2 other princely devils assisting. From there, 6 major demons form the royal court and act as military leaders and divisional heads. After that come all the subordinate spirits of hell. And it is among those I found Raffles, whose name means the lion trembling. Also named Caffles, this demon was under the control of one of the infernal princes, and specialized in finding those who were timid, but had potential to roar like a lion. The idea was that Raffles would infect the individual in question and embolden them to do things they never would have otherwise. For example, Raffles might possess a world leader and have them invade a country despite knowing that it would bring world condemnation. I should point out that for Raffles to be able to do their job effectively, the human in question had to have the inclinations, but be afraid to act on them. Most of the time, when dealing with a demon, we view the possessed as innocent. Raffles just brings instincts that often stay buried to the fore. This seemed to be what it did with Grace, at least according to her. After cultivating her inner strength and using it for decades, it then fled, leaving Grace without the inner strength she felt could only come from him. Now, I know what you're thinking. That if the power came from within her all along, maybe just talking to her could get her on the road to self-confidence and recovery. That's a very nice thought. But this isn't some idiotic after-school special. All would not be put right in the last 15 minutes. This girl had a demon riding her for 20 years and controlling many of her actions. She was effectively a tourist in her own body. And now, she was being given full control despite having little practical experience in making her own decisions. This was a disaster for her, and I couldn't figure out what the reasoning behind it was. If this was the aforementioned world leader, there was a bigger agenda to screw with the world. But at the time Grace was possessed, she was 3 years old and was harmless. While I knew it was frequent that demons enjoyed creating chaos, there was almost always a plan for their actions, and I couldn't figure out Raffles' plan. I just knew that there was a broken young woman who felt like every amount of confidence, strength, and power had been suddenly sucked out of her. After 20 years of being possessed, in the ultimate instance of Stockholm Syndrome, Grace was so lost that she wanted the demonic entity back inside her to call the shots. It was at that point the truth of it hit me like lightning, and I raced back to see Grace, calling the doctor along the way. The house was prematurely dark when I arrived, and Grace's mother seemed noticeably shaken as she led us to Grace's room. The door was closed and seemingly locked. I could hear chanting from inside, and was sure I could detect the smell of incense related to summoning rituals. Separated from the unnatural spirit that made her life better, she decided to try and call it back. The willing act of summoning and possessing is very different from the passive one. The act was certainly result in damnation, but also there was no way of knowing what exactly she would summon. I had what I thought was the real name of her possessor, but that didn't mean she did. What's more, it seemed very possible and probable that a subordinate demon like Raffles was clearing the way for something much more nasty and powerful to possess Grace. The demon master of Raffles is Paimon, Cardinal Demon of the West. This demon is a sower of discontent and eventual destruction. It creates dire situations and uses its voice to drown out reason and thoughtfulness. It encourages people to ignore common sense and blame each other, to therefore bring about the end of whichever civilization it attaches itself to. As we crashed through the locked door, Grace looked up at us with eyes not her own. They seemed to blaze red as the entity now controlling her opened its mouth. The voice was loud, ear-splittingly loud. So loud as to be not coherent. Then, Grace vanished. The date was the 2nd of January, 2020, when Grace disappeared. The same day, the Center for Disease Control in the United States announced the outbreak of a nasty virus I'm sure we're all familiar with. The voice of Paimon started by telling us that it would be over soon, and we should all get along, but changed when our immediate deliverance through a science fiction TV miracle didn't take place. Paimon inspired blame toward those of different backgrounds. Paimon also created rifts between those who disagreed on what the best course of action should be. In the end, the virus didn't create hell on Earth. Our own behavior did, thanks to Paimon.
For your bonus episode, Creepy presents Black Cat Chocolate, written by Paul Wilson. Blog dated October 21st. Ever heard of Black Cat Chocolate? It wasn't a huge seller, not like Hershey. But back in the day, you could usually find it in those cinder block gas stations. The kind with a lot of dead leaves collected between rusted pumps and a sun-faded cola machine on the outside with buttons so white you can't read what sodas might be inside. And you wouldn't dare drink them anyway. These days you don't hear much about BCC, but it still has a cult following if you know where to look. Occasionally someone will find a random box in some out-of-the-way discount store or foreign grocery and post an unboxing video on YouTube. But the videos are always taken down within a few hours, no matter what you've heard about just needing to know the right title description to find one. In my childhood, the packaging was cheap. Not shiny like a modern Reese's wrapper. It was made of thin paper that punctured easily. Sometimes it was brown with the yellow outline of an arching cat. Sometimes it was black packaging with a white cat outline. I've heard up north, Canada, that it was always black with a chubby yellow girl on the front. But down in Mexico way, it was orange with the head of a single-toothed baby doll grinning, and some say drooling. I've read on message boards about a red wrapper with a black cat silhouette and black polka dots. Supposedly, that was for a run that contained hot spices in the chocolate, but I've never seen proof of that variant. I've seen BCC in old Halloween pictures. You know, the ones of kids wearing obviously homemade costumes that look like nightmare fuel? It always migrated to the bottom of your trick-or-treat bag with the Mary Janes and circus peanuts. It tastes chalky. It tends to mold and form white lines and circles on its hide. It crumbles. Sometimes it's moist in the middle. It comes in bars or round cups. I read a review where one guy said his came in nuggets that smelled funny. Some swear it once had designs stamped on its candy surface, but I can't find any pictures of those decorations. Funny loops and swirls that don't mean nothing, I read somewhere. Some say the designs were words. Some say it gave them headaches to look at. I'll agree Black Cat Chocolate had some kind of decoration, but no one can agree on what. They never show up in those rare unboxing videos. Maybe they were discontinued for cost? No one can agree. No one knows. And who can forget the bugs found inside the chocolate bars? That's something you can look up. Those pictures. Yeah. If you can find the footage with the 70s newscaster barfing all over his desk, it is priceless. But you feel bad for the guy. He looks so sick. I guess they weren't used to that kind of thing back then. Some of the bugs still wiggled when he broke open the chocolate. Or so I've heard. When I was in elementary school, I heard parents talking about how Black Cat Chocolate made some children sick out west and put them in the hospital. Some kids on the playground said if you leave it in the sun, the chocolate has reaction and turns to poison. A friend of mine knew a boy who knew a girl whose father used it to kill some kittens they didn't want. Did you hear about those kids who found razors in their Halloween candy? It was Black Cat bars. It's cheap and rushed chocolate, so it's easy to insert needles or other nasty surprises into. It loves to hide things. Some say it hates to be eaten. Maybe it seeks revenge that way. But that's just blue skying. Still, it kind of feels right if you can dig it. A hero was created by a 1950s starlet who couldn't get movie roles anymore. Then she got wind of a new producer, a fat guy with a sweet tooth. So she tried to make him fudge, but being a movie star, she didn't know how. She tried for days, putting everything in the mix. Getting more and more desperate and eventually passed out from exhaustion. When she woke up, she found some of her recipe had set up in a bread pan and was ready. She gave it to the producer, got the part, and then he died. But every morning, the red pan was full of chocolate again. She eventually sold the recipe to a candy company and Black Cat Chocolate was born, taking its name from the title of the movie she lost when the producer croaked. It said bad luck always follows the candy. But of course, that's not how it was made. That would be ridiculous. I've seen pictures of a BCC ad with a beautiful blonde in a tight dress. The rumor is she ate some of the candy while filming a commercial and they caught her reaction on film. Of course, the film can't be found, but people say they've seen it or know someone who has. They say she takes a bite and stops. Just stops dead. Her eyes go wide and she starts to scream, but her mouth is glued shut by the chocolate. Then muck and blood begin to dribble out of her mouth and she screeches, putting her hands up like she's trying to stop the flow, but then jerks away as if the goo is hot. It said you can still hear her trying to say the lines, "It's so good." Then the reports get muddled. Some say she claws at her cheek until she made holes in her face to reach in and pull out chunks of unchewed candy. Some say it started a chemical reaction and her skin began to melt. Some say she slammed her head against the counter until she broke all the bones in her face. And that is the last thing you see on film. I don't know. That sounds insane, like putting razors in kids' candy. But we all know that happened. I think this is the truth. Black Cat Chocolate was made by Ida Mae Valentine. She was no movie star, but she did make it in the 50s. She was a typical suburban housewife and batshit insane. People said you could tell. You could see it. It said she smiled until her teeth cracked. She never blinked except when people were not looking. She insisted on being called by her husband's last name. She cooked night and day, and the smell of chocolate was so strong, her home always smelled of candy, even when she wasn't home. Neighbors complained. One witness said they saw her through an open window, stirring batter and crying. Her smile was frozen on, and she was screaming through clenched teeth. Crazy, but I think it's true. Well, some of it. You know how rumors are. That's all the internet is anymore. Just another schoolyard. An electronic gathering place where we tell each other we heard this or that and someone my cousin knew heard it another way. Anyway, I'm writing this because I have some. I have some Black Cat chocolate. I bought it off the dark web. I bought it as part of one of those mystery boxes. The seller guaranteed there was Black Cat chocolate in the box. $1,343.89. The seller was very specific about the amount of payment. Why? I don't know. I'm not a YouTuber or culture influencer. I write this blog, but only a handful of dedicated folks read it. Of course, I'll post my findings here and even show pictures of what's in the box. But this is for me. I'm going to open it and go for the chocolate first. I don't care what else is in the box. I've been craving that taste from my childhood, and I can't find it anywhere. A friend said it's become an obsession for me, but you know how it is. When you get a specific taste and nothing else will satisfy, hell, I'm lucky I found some. I wonder how old it is. But it's authentic. The seller promised. I'm going to stop writing and open the box now. I want to hurry. I want to taste that chocolate. But I'm also dying to find out what smells so bad inside the box. Hopefully it's not the chocolate.
For more information on this podcast, including how to submit your own story for consideration, please visit creepypod.com. You can also follow us at CreepyPod on social media and YouTube. All stories told on this podcast are done so through Creative Commons Sharealike licensing or with written consent from the authors. No portion of this podcast may be rebroadcast or otherwise distributed without the express written consent of the Creepy Podcast production team and the story's author.